Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Maureen Healy, who is the author of The Energetic Keys to Indigo Kids, Your Guide to Raising and Resonating with the New Children. Maureen is a spiritual teacher, energy worker, and counselor who works with the parents and children throughout the world. And she writes a popular blog on Psychology Today's website, and also for the PBS series, This Emotional Life. She has numerous appearances in magazines and on TV, and her website is www.growinghappykids.com. Thanks, Maureen, for joining us.
Oh, I'm delighted.
So, tell us a little bit about how you got interested in studying the indigo children and where your inspiration came from.
That's a great question. Let's see, how did I get interested? Well, my background, I began counseling adults and then moved into counseling children. And I'm a highly sensitive person myself, and I just saw more and more highly sensitive children come into my office, and the indigos were one of the large populations of kids who were coming into my office. They have this intense energy that is very sensitive, but also very fierce. So they hold those two opposing qualities. So in other words, they can go in the right direction very quickly, or they can go in a direction that can be challenging very quickly. So they sort of need our guidance, as well as their parents and teachers and healers and adults nurturing and raising them are often sort of left scratching their head, like, what do I do? So that was really the inspiration, is to, instead of helping, you know, one child by one child, write a book and help more people.
Yes, indigo children seem to have more better response to a partnering type of relationship than a being told what to do type of relationship from your book.
Right.
I thought that was interesting.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And their emotional bodies are probably a little different as well. And once you get them stirred up, they don't tend to calm down as easily, and they have triggers. You want to talk a little bit about their emotional bodies and how they differ maybe from the baby boomers and what the triggers are that are commonly seen?
Well, sure. I mean, you know, back in the olden days, if I dare say decades ago, you know, kids and adults, you would just get raised and you would just do sort of what you wanted to do. You know, you would do what your parents or your teachers told you to do, even if you didn't agree with it. And indigos aren't like that. They're non-programmable. So they're going to do what they want to do, regardless of external punishment or regardless of what other people feel. If they don't think something's right, they'll cry. They'll say, absolutely not. So they're very, what I would say is, inwardly motivated, and they stay true to who they are. But oftentimes it looks like defiance or stubbornness or being strong-willed. And what their emotions are is they cannot not express their emotions. So if they feel something is really right, that's the right thing to do, they cannot be forced into doing something else. So they really stay true to their mindset. They have a shared mindset, they have shared values, and their emotions are intense, and their energy or emotional body, as you said, it goes very quickly. They have high intelligence, and their energy moves quicker. So that's why that intensity that we talked about before, it needs to be channeled, and it can go in the right direction, you know, say doing a creative project or something they love, or they can start screaming their eyes out all within moments. So that's often what adults have the challenge with. They often are scratching their head, what happened, you know? So they sort of need a guidebook on, you know, how do you interpret indigos and these triggers, like you mentioned. Like one trigger would be, if they didn't think something was being honest or fair, they deeply believe in equanimity and equality, and that's why, as you mentioned, partnership, they really want to be treated as an equal, even though they are a kid. They want to be treated and solicited their opinion. Of course, you're an adult and you are the authority figure, but they certainly want to be felt like they have a voice, and if they don't, it's not going to work out well. So the idea is to know the triggers up front so you can either manage them, learn how to deal with them, do the things that really work instead of accidentally triggering them.
And when you're dealing with indigo kids, you also have to be aware that they have a much more active intuitive input rather than just a logical and intelligent input. They are intelligent, but it's more intuitive. So they may be working with a broader range of information than somebody who's not so intuitive.
Well, they just know if you're being dishonest, which is what you're saying. You know, they're intuitive. They know. They can see through it. If you said, oh, we're, you know, that's not what that person said, they can feel it in their gut or however they receive their intuition. And they know. They know if something's not right or nothing, they know. And they're going to trust their gut. Another way of saying that is their primary intelligence is intuitive. And the other intelligences are certainly there, too, but their primary one they rely on is their inner wisdom, their intuition.
So what age range are the indigos in right now?
It's such a good question. I mean, you know, if anyone puts any sort of, you know, blanket name or, you know, it always can be wrong. I know that there was a lot said about, you know, really indigos came into full force during the 1978 and beyond, more indigos came. And I believe that's true. But I know indigos that came in the 40s and the 50s, they were sort of like indigo scouts. You know, is this the right place for us? Are we going to really make a difference here? But nowadays, there's all sorts of sensitive children, whether you define them as starseeds or crystals or rainbow. And I guess, you know, from my perspective, that the labels are less important. The reason I was so attracted to working with the indigos, and that I do see lots of them now from, you know, birth to teenagers to young adults, you know, a lot of parents in their 30s and 40s are indigo, too. So that's why we have a new generation of parenting happening. It's sort of very different than the way perhaps I was parented or you were parented. But indigos need such support and assistance because they can get into challenges or trouble or whatever you want to call it. They, you know, they have that intensity to them and that they really need guidance and mentoring on how to make that work, how to balance that, you know, intensity and that really sweet, sensitive energy along with their fierceness. When they want to do something, they want to do it, or they feel compelled to make a difference, whether it was in, you know, eventually in education or the government or, you know, something that they really felt they could make a difference. Many indigos and them as a collective are often born to break down systems. You know, they're called system busters, and to create ones that actually work, which is, you know, a good channel for that fierceness, but certainly hard to parent at times, let's put it that way.
So do you think our increased, at least publicity about whistleblowers now might be that indigos have gotten to a certain, you know, level of authority to have clearances and, you know, into corporations that have secrets and into the government, the NSA, that have secrets, and then they inherently believe it's wrong. They follow their inner guidance, even though it really disrupts their lives tremendously.
Right.
And that's that would be a very indigo thing to do.
Absolutely.
From what your description was. Yeah.
Absolutely. They're changing systems, and they cannot suppress their emotions, and they cannot turn a blind eye. Where different generations can say, you know, it's really not cool, but that's the way it works. It is what it is.
Yeah, they make excuses.
No, they have to stand in their power and say, that's not, even if like what you're saying, it comes at a personal cost at times.
Yeah. Well, our information coming from Session is that there's going to be a lot more whistleblowers on the scene, and it's going to get really annoying for the powers that be and the government and, you know, the people that wish to keep these secrets boxed up. And so that really does fit in with the indigos. Like you said, once they have the information, they have to act on it. And they also have the inner guidance on how to act on it, too, because whistleblowing in itself requires a great deal of spiritual protection as well as guidance in general on how to do it. I mean, there's many ways to blow the whistle, and some will get you killed and others ones won't. And you know, the trick is to figure out how to do it without, you know, without sacrificing everything.
Right. So. And that's why, you know, a lot of these adult indigos, it's helpful to have them have mentors so that they can continue to live their life purpose, whatever that may be, but do it in a way that works for them. And like you said, they don't have to be in necessarily great harm, in a harm's way.
Right. So you talk in your book about a lot of there's a chapter on channeling. Well, let's talk first about energetic triggers. Let's go into that a little bit deeper. What are some of the energetic triggers that that the children deal with and the parents have to be aware of?
Sure. We mentioned dishonesty. Another one that we sort of mentioned, I call authoritarian approach, which would be, you know, if an adult says, hey, my way or the highway, that's never going to work for an indigo. They really need that highway. Yeah, they'll be like, I'm out of here. That's right.
And when you're six, that's not a good idea.
Not a good idea. That's right. Communications, oftentimes indigos, since they are highly sensitive children, but they also have that shared values and mindset, they also, you know, they're very sensitive to the words people say to them or to the environments they're in, the actual physical environments, how they feel. And they, you know, if someone says something to them, they can waver between, you know, high confidence one moment and then really low self-esteem the next moment. Because they are so sensitive and they are really responsive to criticism. So the way that parents and teachers and the way that they're spoken to, it does need to be a partnering approach. And not that you just need to be gentle with them. Let's put it that way. Because you want to develop their inner strength as well as their ability to see their sensitivity as an asset and use it that way, opposed to letting it become a handicap. So that's, you know, the communications are important to them. And it can be a trigger. Sensory overload also can be a trigger. You know, that's with other highly sensitive children, too. You know, with bright lights. I mean, I've had all sorts of, there are some children with sensory integration issues, but this is a separate thing. We're talking about kids that just, you know, they go into a restaurant, there's all those big screen TVs, and it just jars their system. And they start crying, and they feel upset. You know, it's just sensory overload. So that, that can be a trigger. And, you know, lack of freedom is another one. And they hate to be rushed. So we've all had that experience. You know, you don't want to be rushed. You're getting immersed in something that you love. But these kids really have a hard time. They enjoy that timeless space versus being very time-based. So they really need a coach on how you operate in this world that is time-based. It's just the nature of the world. So, you know, being rushed is a trigger. And also a lot of indigos, you know, they're used to that. You know, they came from a place in spirit that was perfect. So they come into this world and they're like, this doesn't look perfect. They want everything to be perfect, though. So they, a lot of them are perfectionists. So helping them sort of realize that that's not going to make them happy and get them where they need to be is helpful, too. That's just another sort of trigger. They can melt down when they see things. You know, they can write on paper and they do it so many different times. Parents are like, what's wrong? What are you doing? Just do it, you know? So, but they really want it to be perfect.
Well, I have a saying that you can use for the indigo kids. It's on time is when I get there. How's that? You also mentioned a nutritional trigger potential.
Right. That's true. I mean, I've worked with so many different types of sensitive children, and being a sensitive person myself, but I mean, we get out of us what we put into us, and they're not just emotionally sensitive, they're physically sensitive. So the food that they eat, oftentimes, you know, and I'm not a nutritionist, so I can't really make those medical decisions, but what I've seen is, you know, taking gluten or casein or certain things out of the diet, and the more organic that you eat and the more juice, the more alive food that you give children, the better they are. They just behave better. You know, they're healthier, they're happier, they have more natural energy. So that's real important. And, of course, they need to channel the energy, which we can chat about. But the, certainly, you know, it's allergies are different than food sensitivities. You know, you can have an allergy to something, and that's severe. A food sensitivity is more subtle, but that will greatly impact your child's behavior. So oftentimes, like naturopaths can check for food sensitivity.
Yeah, we have chiropractor here, Dr. Mike, who does NATE, which is the elimination of those allergy and food sensitivities, which can be very helpful. Otherwise, the kid's on a very restricted diet, which when you send them to school is virtually impossible to to stick to. So we recommend getting rid of the allergy. It's a lot easier. So next comes to the information about avoiding the triggers.
Right.
I think this is a real good one. You start with partnering.
Mm-hmm.
You want to talk about that a little bit? Partnering,
sure,
and choices?
Sure. I mean, the idea is that, you know, you partner with kids. You say, you know, what do you think? Even if you really want them to do certain things, you give them choices, and you could load one choice, but, you know, you want to mm-hmm. connect with them so they feel like they have a voice in everything. Most, mm-hmm. a lot of kids, you know, they feel like, you know, school's enemy number one and parents are enemy number two. And that's, you know, that's not a great way to grow up. You want to grow up feeling like your mom or your dad or your caregivers, they've got your back. So that's mm-hmm. where the partnering is, just valuing them deep and helping mm-hmm. them really feel that, you know, they have choices, that they're powerful creators right from the get-go. I mean, they need your guidance mm-hmm. and they need to learn and develop, but, you know, they certainly need to have a voice.
What about negotiation?
Yeah, you know, a lot of people would say don't negotiate with kids. But, I mean, I'd be hard-pressed to find a parent who hasn't negotiated with their child, actually. And particularly mm-hmm. with indigos, it's essential because, you know, they're so smart. They're so intelligent. You know, if you tell them a reason, oh, we're doing this because of this, they'll find the loophole. I mean, these kids are so bright. They're often gifted in one area. And so negotiating them with them means you're really hearing them and you're partnering with them. So if you want them to set the table, you know, hey, if you set the table, you'll have 15 more minutes of video game. That's negotiation. You know, sort of do something that works for them and works for you so that you can really come together as a family unit or a classroom or whatever it is to make things happen and do it with more harmony. So I'm a big proponent of negotiation, and of course there are some things that are not negotiable, like, you know, changing your underwear and brushing your teeth and all those things. But you certainly can say, hey, do you want to brush your teeth now, or do you want to brush it, you know, before you go to bed? I mean, there certainly can be flexibility in when mm-hmm. kids do things, but there are non-negotiables as well, of course.
And authenticity, how is their belief system affect that?
Well, like we talked about before, they can smell dishonesty from miles away, so they're never going to develop that trust with you, whether you're a teacher or a parent or someone in their community, unless you're mm-hmm. being authentic with them. They value honesty so deeply, and they so want to be the person they came here to be, which probably mm-hmm. looks like no one else before and probably could be in a career we haven't even dreamed of yet. So they really mm-hmm. need you to connect on a heart-to-heart, on a level that's genuine, and that, you know, you can, for example, if they fail at something, you can, as their parent, give an example, say, hey, you know, I failed it, you know, when I went out for the basketball team when I was younger, but I tried again. You know, you give them honest stories that help inspire and encourage them, and they'll really mm-hmm. value you, you know. But if you, for example, I had one indigo kid that I work with who the mother was great mom, but she really just didn't tell him what was going on. And it's not that it was too adult for him. It was just like she just didn't want to talk about it. But he kept pushing her buttons because he knew that she was sort of lying to him. So they will act out mm-hmm. if they don't feel like they're getting sort of a real connection with you. So by being mm-hmm. honest with them, even if it's, hey, I need 15 minutes, mom's a little upset right now, and then we can come back and talk about it for 5 minutes, but mm-hmm. I'm going to need 15 minutes. Just, you know, be honest wherever you're at, whether you're frustrated, you're upset, you need a few minutes, you know. So it shows them that you can have all the ranges of emotions, whether it's joy or anger, and they're not bad. It's just how you let them out.
And how is guidance support important for these children?
Well, guidance really, you know, they need to benefit from our wisdom or our ability to have been here on this planet Earth longer, because they come from a place, these kids, these sensitive kids, where they, you know, they still can manifest pretty quickly, but they, you know, they don't know how planet Earth operates. So they really need mm-hmm. someone to say, hey, you know, I don't want to stand in line at the store either, but we got to do what we got to do. You know, they need someone to coach them mm-hmm. and mentor them and help them see that, validate their feelings, but also give them a little piece of, like, this is how it works here, and, you know, I believe in you, but, you know, help them learn how to navigate this world. And they can be sensitive, but they also need to balance it with reason. So it's really that, you know, development of the right and the left brain and really sort of validating who they are, oftentimes I find that indigos are born to, like, one parent that sort of is in tune with them, and another parent is like, oh, my God, it's a Martian. They dropped off. I have no idea who this kid is. And sometimes two parents would say, it's a Martian. I have no idea who this kid is. So it's really helping them sort of value who they are and know that who they are and what they feel and what they think is real, but helping support them and guiding them through the way, you know, this world works, mm-hmm. whether it's shopping or school or, you know, operating healthy in a family, whatever the topic of the day is.
Hmm. And the indigos require, I guess, a different kind of support than the baby boomers did. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, certainly, you know, parenting and the way people are born, you know, the children who are being born today are just so different, right? You know, years mm-hmm. ago you were raised, and not that you didn't need the support, but parenting years ago was like, you know, we put a roof over your head and, you know, mm-hmm. we put food on the table and, you know, we did our job and we're really glad and it worked out. Nowadays, parents want to, you know, nurture children's inner emotional lives. They want them to feel supported. They want them, many adults want them to, you know, feel like they, mm-hmm. you know, want to be happy. They don't just want to get them a job. They want them to be who they came here to be. So it's just a different mm-hmm. paradigm of raising children. And I think part of that is that a lot of adults have indigo qualities or traits. So they're having gone through an experience where they didn't feel seen or heard, and they're like, I'm not going to do this to my kids. So children, mm-hmm. indigos that are being born today, you know, a lot of them benefit from that. And still there's many kids who parents are afraid they're autistic or they're all different things because they're just different. And I'm not mm-hmm. debunking that those aren't issues. Those are very real issues. But, you know, when you realize what are the symptoms or the qualities or traits of highly sensitive children, what are the indigo kids and how does my child fit in? Often indigos have quirks. Like their, you know, I had one child who was scared of butterflies. He refused to leave his house in North Carolina because of butterflies. So obviously his parents had to deal with this. I had another child who, you know, went to the bathroom and he was afraid that a ghost could come up through the, you know, through the, so he wouldn't pee by himself. So, I mean, certainly, you know, they have these quirks. So you have to be able to sort of assuage their fears and validate them and help them really, you know, get the guidance from you. And mm-hmm. they do scare easier. And it's a big deal. And you know, if you think back, if you can remember, if anyone on the line can remember, when you were little, I mean, it's a big, scary world sometimes, especially if you're young. And, you know, I mean, so they need that kind of coaching and guidance and support.
Yeah, I can remember being very frightened of nuclear war.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we were doing these nuclear war get under your desk.
Yeah.
And I think I had a real good understanding that if there was a nuclear explosion, getting under your desk wouldn't do any good at all.
You knew as a little child, you're like, I'll do this, but this makes no sense.
Yeah, really. So
right.
What it does, though, it undoes your trust in the security of the world.
Right.
Because there is no, I mean, even my neighbors had, you know, underground bunkers.
Mm-hmm.
But even that wouldn't be really helpful
right.
if there was a bunch of radiation. I mean,
right.
anyway, it's, yeah.
And I do think that, you know, the old paradigm of the world and you know, raising kids really is from a place of fear to one more of love, really. I mean, if
mm-hmm.
we, you know, dip into A Course in Miracles, I mean, I know that going to school, I went to a Catholic school and it was very much fear-based. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm,
if you
right.
didn't do something, you were in trouble. Things
yeah.
that work better for indigos are to inspire them and to get them involved in things that they love.
Right.
And, you know, that's sort of the ideal case scenario when you do that as much as you can, of course. But that's where we're moving to, is really connecting kids to their strengths and their passions. I mean, think about Mark Zuckerberg, right, who did the Facebook. I mean, he started doing an early IM at home. His parents gave him a computer. His dad used that early IM in his dentist office. They found a
mm-hmm.
channel for his energy, and they said, okay, you love this, go at it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, he certainly has that defiance of an indigo and that sort of sensitivity and perception of, you know, what would change the world. And he was able to
mm-hmm.
do good things with that. And, of course, you know, not everybody likes him and all that kind of thing. But indigos, usually have strong personalities, too. Another mm-hmm. adult indigo would be like an Angelina Jolie, who learned mm-hmm. how to channel her energy for good with her humanitarian work, but who was, you know, a little bit of a wild character in her earlier days. That's very indigo.
Yeah, it certainly is. Exploring mm-hmm. both sides of the darkness and the light, and swing
mm-hmm.
and blow.
But it shows yeah. how you can use that energy to transform if that's, mm-hmm. you know, what you do. So, but a lot of indigos can, if they don't have great role models or they don't connect with people who can really validate who they are and get healthy ideas in their head and things like that, you know, they can go in the wrong direction to drugs and alcohol and all that kind of stuff,
mm-hmm.
too. So it's just so important in the early years to surround kids with people who really see them and support them and want to encourage them to be who they came here to be, no matter what that is.
Mm-hmm. In the chapter channeling energy, it seems like the indigos probably have just more energy than some of the other groups do, and this can get them in trouble or it can help them out a great deal. Just depends on how it's used.
Absolutely. They are very, very, very high energy children. That's absolutely correct. And, you know, they can use it for good or they can get, you know, it can go in the wrong direction. But it certainly, it is a gift. And the challenge with parents is many parents of indigos are, you know, they would be nodding their head if I said something like, you always have to give them projects. They always need something to do. That's very indigo, you know. They sort of don't want to be bored. Or if they, you know, some kids may be fine in the backyard as indigos out in nature. Others, you know, want to do puzzles and things. But indigos have that energy and that intensity, too.
Yeah, so you talk about steering their energy. What advice do you have there?
Well, yeah, I mean, they need channel for it. So Brené Brown, the best-selling author, who was recently on Oprah, a quote from her, she said that any unused creativity isn't benign, and I agree with her fully. So the idea is that any unused energy in the child isn't going to work out good. They really need that every day, sort of either exercise or some way to channel the energy, whether it's music, playing the piano, playing the cello, whether it's exercise, whether it's drawing, whether it's karate, whether it's going outside on a little baby trampoline and jump on that for 15 minutes. They just need ways to get their energy out. It might be reading. It might be doing math. It might be doing something that they love, but something that's going to get them channeling their energy out. Ideally, it's something a little bit physical, whether it's a walk or some sort of exercise, but certainly it can be something that they just adore, whether they're trying to build a treehouse in the backyard or they're learning about a garden or they're researching something online. The idea is to really help them use their energy in positive ways each day and not just, you know, come home from school and sit on the couch kind of thing. That's just not going to be good for them.
Now, if they do run into energy blocks or if their energy is misdirected, what do you suggest then?
Right. Well, I'm a big proponent of energy healing. But certainly that can start. You can start, you know, an energy blockage. I mean, it goes back to the traditional, you know, ancient Eastern philosophy of energy and health, which is, you know, free-flowing energy is the cause of health. And when there's things aren't flowing, that's the cause of illness. So the idea if there's a blockage going on or if their energy mm-hmm. isn't being channeled out, you know, it will manifest as something. For example, I often work with kids for whatever different reasons haven't channeled angry or upsetting energy out of their body, and they become depressed. Mm-hmm. So it will manifest as something. And oftentimes that's when, you know, I do both traditional counseling with parents and children, but I also do energy healing or Reiki, hands-on healing. And I found the combination of both really wonderful with indigos and sensitive children. So I'm a big proponent of using both modern medicine and alternative medicine to help these children heal. And since they are so sensitive, they respond so well to energy healing. I mean, it's really, because it goes deeper, it goes to the cause of wellness and illness, and it really gets their energy moving again.
Now, you do mention tapping in the book. Would you like to tell the audience what that is?
Yeah, it's non-invasive tapping. Nick Ortner has actually a best-selling book called The Tapping Solution. But tapping is when you hit, you know, our bodies, our physical body is a matrix within our energy body. In our energy body, we have seven chakras or centers within the body. I talk about in the book. I talk about the bubble around us, the aura, our own personal energy field called aura. And I also talk about the meridians, which is what acupuncture is based on. And those are the lines of energy within the body that's been around for thousands of years, and it's really amazing. Anyway, tapping is hitting a certain energy line based on the meridians, mm-hmm. and by gently tapping certain pressure points, you get the energy moving again. And when you put certain words to that, the energy really moves. And that will get the blockage out. So I'm a big proponent of that because it is non-invasive. And it's also, our goal is really not for us to be fixing our kids, so to speak, but really empowering them with ways that they can use when they're at school and we're not with them, whether it's saying a prayer, whether it's tapping, whether it's holding a crystal and putting their anger into the crystal, the things that they can do to learn how to manage their energy and emotions so that they can be healthy and they can really grow strength and be who they came here to be, because, it's when they feel powerless that there's sort of problems going on.
Yeah. And some of the more subtle ways of healing seem to work very well,
mm-hmm.
like the flower essences and the,
mm-hmm.
The essences made out of the stones and the crystal healing. Those
mm-hmm.
are things that balance the energy body, particularly dealing with certain things, color healing, which is vibrational. So your book
mm-hmm.
has a lot of information on that, too, which is,
mm-hmm.
I think, is a real good way to treat the indigos.
Yeah, the indigos, they need to have their personal energy field protected, and they have a tendency to be ungrounded, which is, not helpful for them. So, if they're not finishing their homework, if they're getting distracted easier, there's other ways to help them remedy that could be used with crystals. And
mm-hmm.
I've never met an indigo that doesn't like crystals. I've met parents that say, oh, he doesn't like crystals. And then when I go into a private session, he says, oh, yes, I do. So I just haven't met kids that don't like crystals. It's just they sort of at such a deep level resonate with it. And what's interesting to me is also that we don't really talk about it because it sounds so woo-woo. But crystals are in everything. They're in clocks. They're in medical devices. They're in our computers. We wouldn't have the modern world we have without crystals.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more practical and scientific than most people think.
Right. Well, crystals are good for putting out a particular vibration time and time again. That's what they do.
Mm-hmm.
They're like a transmitter.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the other ones, the flower and the gem essences and the homeopathics are more, in my mind, the homeopathics are more for physical problems, the flower essences more for emotional problems, and then
mm-hmm.
the gem elixirs are more for mental and spiritual changes,
mm-hmm.
like
mm-hmm.
hematite can be used for if you want to induce out-of-body experiences, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
It's they have particular uses, although there is some overlap. But I've interviewed several times, he's deceased now, but I interviewed the author of Vibrational Medicine,
mm-hmm.
and that is one of the best books on...
Is that Richard Gerber? Who was that?
Yeah, Richard Gerber.
Yeah. Yeah.
Richard said he was jealous of me because I actually practiced in a practice that allowed me to practice the medicine, the vibrational medicine
uh-huh.
that he wrote about. But he was actually an internist, and he practiced a pretty straightforward medicine in his group practice,
uh-huh.
which isn't that interesting that he was so knowledgeable but didn't get the opportunity to really practice it.
And his books were great. I know. I've read them. So, yeah. Yeah.
And they're really good.
I just thought that the crystals are so helpful for kids to stay grounded, to stay focused, they oftentimes kids need to feel protected. So some mental exercises along with a crystal, mm-hmm. and sometimes the crystal certainly helps, but it's symbolic mm-hmm. as well. They feel protected. And that's tremendous, especially if they're going into places with lots of people, lots of different energies, and they're very sensitive, and, you know, mm-hmm. you want them to sort of close off their energy field. So, you know, it's knowing about these combinations of healing methods that there'll be a right mix for your child.
Mm-hmm. And the indigos also have the ability to choose which crystals they need.
Oh, they're
Because they
great.
Can do that
oh,
intuitively.
Great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's
absolutely.
True.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I'm big into crystal grids for Indigo's bedroom to keep it mm-hmm. calm, to keep it serene, to help them really create that space that they feel safe and protected. Because these are kids that really do have to learn how to sort of close off their energy field because they pick up a lot of debris out there, whether it's the mm-hmm. news like you talk about or what's going on. You know, they really yeah. need to feed their minds with positive and empowering messages. Because they are so tuned in, they are so sensitive and intuitive, so they really need to sort of build their inner confidence and create that safe space to grow.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've got a section in the book on keys to indigo success, everyday exercises. Mm-hmm. You want to mention some of those?
Sure, sure. Well, I mean, the big piece of the puzzle is that, you know, indigos are often very gifted in one area, and many indigos are great with intuitive and, you know, being sort of connected above the spirit, but they have a hard time connecting to the earth. So a lot of mm-hmm. these success keys, and I'll go through them, is about grounding their intuition, their gifts on planet Earth, so they can be a success here, you know, so that they aren't just these brilliant little kids that can daydream, but that they really, you know, contribute the gifts that are within them. So that's a big, important, you know, piece of the puzzle. I know the first mm-hmm. success key I talk about really is balancing intuition and reason. So that's a big one because intuitive intelligence is their natural intelligence. So the mm-hmm. idea is that, you know, you want to develop their intuition and their sensitivities and use it as an asset and strength, but you want them to also benefit from using the logical side of their brain. So learning how to balance it and make the best choices is key.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I can just go through the keys if you'd like.
Sure, that'd be great.
Sure. The second one is learning life skills. So, like I just mentioned, they're good at knowing how to, you know, they can probably naturally meditate, and they're very intuitive, and they probably guess what you're saying, and they'll know who's calling before the person even says hi. You know, they're very tuned in, but they need earth skills, whether it's, you know, money management or self-responsibility or learning, you know, wisdom, ideas that are wise, whether it's karma or the golden rule, you know, by teaching them ethics and how to operate on this plane in an effective manner, they can really have a life that's very successful. And another piece is really seeing their sensitivity as a strength, meaning sometimes parents say, oh, you know, what is my child? I mean, the one question I get from a lot of, and I don't want to be stereotypical, but it's true, it's often from dads, is, how is my kid ever going to operate in the real world? Like, you know, that's like the question. Like,
yeah,
what is
that's
my
the
kid?
Problem.
And it's
yeah.
you. So it really is, the third key is really helping them see their sensitivity as a strength. You know, to mm-hmm. see that their sensitivity has gifts in it. They need to learn how to balance it with reason, develop life skills, and have the courage to bring their gifts to the world. But we don't mm-hmm. want to project onto them, like, oh, my God, what's wrong with this kid? You know what I mean? Like, we really want to see their energy as positive, as good, as light-filled, and that they need our guidance, or they need, you know, an older indigo or someone with similar sensitivity to mentor them. Something like that mm-hmm. would be the essential situation. It could be a therapist, it could be a coach, it could be a teacher, it could be an extended family member, but they need someone who's been successful with balancing their sensitivity as a strength. They need that kind of guidance, so that's really important. The next one is really, you know, it sort of sounds really complicated, but the idea of finding their purpose, and of course, as little kids, you may not always be able to find their purpose. I had one little girl who just knew from 3 years old she wanted to be a nurse, and now she's in nursery school. But that doesn't always happen. But that point is, you know, get them involved in the things that they love and really support mm-hmm. them in doing that. And, you may have thought that you know, I wanted a doctor as a child and I got a drummer. You know what I mean? Like, sort of mm-hmm. do your best to check your own prejudices and just love your child and support them in, you know, helping them discover their gifts. And certainly their interests may change, but they'll mm-hmm. always remember your support, and they'll discover who they are and have the courage to bring that to life. I mean, Michael Phelps is sincere in Indigo as well. You know, his parents didn't know what to do with him with his energy. They said he had so much energy, and that's why they mm-hmm. wound up signing him up for swimming lessons. They were like, we got to do something with this kid. So,
right.
you know, how many years later, how many gold medals later, it's pretty extraordinary. He also had ADHD,
yeah.
which is, you know, a lot of indigos who haven't learned how to balance themselves often find themselves, you know, sort of just not more interested in other planes of existence than the earth plane, let's put it that way. So helping them stay connected to the earth while, you know, being spiritual and creative and imaginative is really, really important. And the last one is really cultivating social skills. Mm-hmm. It could be etiquette, you know, that builds confidence when they meet people, but it's really social skills, helping them balance their natural tendency quite often to play by themselves and be in solitude with also mm-hmm. connecting with others. It's really important. We can't, you know, live life in a little bubble. So it's certainly we have to be able to have our quiet and private time and also be able to play with others. And I'm not a big proponent necessarily of parents forcing their kids to do things mm-hmm. that, you know, that the kids really hate. Like, for example, I had one kid who just didn't want to go to someone's birthday party. And the mom's like, mm-hmm. what do I do? I was like, well, you got to figure out what's going on. You know, it's not a blanket answer here. But helping, you know, validating who they are and what they're feeling, as well as helping them, you know, in ways develop their own social skills. And oftentimes, indigo kids want to be with other sensitive children, whether they were indigos or another sort of distinction of sensitive kids. You know, they want to be with other kids with similar traits and interests and likes and similarities. So that's a great way to help them build social skills, too.
Basically, the book is very comprehensive. It explains the overlying traits of the children, how they're different, the triggers, how we can help them heal, how we can channel their energy, how they need mentoring and special guidance, and then talking about the special gifts that they have that require just knowledge, and also helping them to develop those gifts, because intuition can be developed, it can be honed. If some indigo goes on to be a psychic and really helps people, or clairvoyant, that really helps people unfold and helps mentor other people who are having to develop their intuitive gifts. I mean, I attended several classes, beginning even in when I was in the military. I attended classes that clairvoyance gave on developing your intuition, and so, you know, those things can be taught, and it's I think the average parent doesn't understand that, but there are people that can help the children develop their intuition and become comfortable with it rather than have it always be more intrusive. So
mm-hmm.
I think that's very important. So would you like to give your contact information once more?
Sure. My website is www.growinghappykids.com. That's growinghappykids.com. And my email is contactus@growinghappykids.com. And I work with parents and children globally to help them thrive and succeed here.
And you have another book, Growing Happy Kids. Is that available? And Children Now are available on your website. Is that right?
It's available everywhere. You can go to Amazon. You can go wherever you want to get a book. And that book, just so that, you know, sort of like a high-level perspective, that's about mm-hmm. nurturing inner strength. So that inner strength and inner confidence, which is the foundation for lasting happiness. So a deeper type of confidence and it, to get to a deeper type of happiness. And it's about bringing Eastern wisdom to Western parents. So it's, and one of the reasons I wrote that book first was because of all the children who need inner strength. Certainly sensitive and indigo kids need it in spades because they are so sensitive to light. So when they become strong from the inside out, they really can persevere and overcome obstacles, which is essential.
Great. Well, it was a great book for me to read. I don't think I've had such a depth of understanding indigo kids. I've interviewed other authors on indigo kids, but this is a great psychological and practical manual for parents. And I want to thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. It's been wonderful.
Well, great. Well, this is Dr. Susan Kolb. We've been interviewing Maureen Healy, who's the author of The Energetic Keys to Indigo Kids. Appreciate you being on with us. Next week, we have Dr. Edward Krondrak, 10 Essentials to Save Your Sight, Healing the Eye Wellness. And then Dr. Norm Shealy will be on back on the show, From Birth to Bliss, The Power of Conscientious Living. And then on the 12th, Penny Pierce, 12th of October, Penny Pierce will be on with Leap of Perception. We have a Noetic Science meeting that will be on the 19th of September at 7:15 at the Dunwoody office. Nancy Banks will be talking about PEMF device, which is Pulse Electronic Magnetic Frequency device, and that goes along with our stem cell interview that we did a couple of weeks ago with Dr. Rudd, who worked for NASA and found out that in certain pulsed electronic magnetic fields, the stem cells were much more active and divided and became much more active. And then the Millennium Healthcare event is a free lecture on diabetes by Diane Hood, which is 7:15 p.m. on the 24th. So this is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show. Join us next week.